Hi, this is Austin Hill. Hey, thanks for checking out this podcast from Austin Hill in the Morning. Now you can hear our program live weekday morning, 6 till 8 Central Time. There are many more podcasts for this and all our Faith Radio shows. They're available online. Our web address, of course, myfaithradio.com. That's myfaithradio.com. And thanks for your gifts to this listener-supported ministry. Enjoy the podcast.
Start your day connecting faith to life. It's Austin Hill in the Morning.
Good morning. It's 6:04 and welcome to it. It's Austin Hill in the Morning. That's the program you're listening to here on the Faith Radio Network. We appreciate you being with us. It's Friday. A harrowing week in multiple sorts of ways. Hope you're doing well, and I hope you can look forward to a pleasant, safe and sane weekend. We've got lots to talk about this morning. We have some great news to celebrate, and this is something that a lot of Christians in America, I know, were praying about. You probably, over the last 60, 90 days or so, have had some sort of touchstone to the name Miriam Ibrahim. Miriam Ibrahim. She is a young woman from the Sudan. She is married to one of our fellow Americans, and she was being held in a prison in Sudan because she refused to abandon her Christianity and become a Muslim. And she's safe and secure and back home, believe it or not. I'll tell you all the good news. This is quite a miracle that has transpired over the last 60, 90 days or so. I'll tell you all about that coming up later this hour here on our program. Kids are out of... Raise your hand if you know somebody. You have a child, a teenager in your family, maybe a grandchild, that is out of school right now. Yep, see, that's what I thought. My wife and I, our high school son, about ready to enter his junior year of high school. He's out of school, and we've been managing all these questions and issues that come up. You know, what do you do with your time? How do you make your time, use your time wisely, and use it for productive purposes? Sure, you're out of class, and we want a little, you know, kickback time for you, son, but let's remain industrious and productive and be working towards our goals. And by the way, let's also be involved in some worthy service projects and ministerial enterprises and those kinds of things. That's been a big part of the conversation in the Hill household over the last 5 or 6 weeks or so. As a matter of fact, my teenage son is out of town with the high school youth group at our church, engaged in a ministry project with a homeless shelter in another city across the country, which is a great, tremendous experience. Kids will be going back to school soon enough, though. And it does raise questions for us if we're not already thinking about them. What kind of environment will our son or daughter or grandchild or niece or nephew be stepping into? And how best do we navigate those waters? How do we give them what they need from us as parents and adult leaders so they grow up becoming secure and confident? When we come back, I'm going to weigh in with a gentleman named Glenn Stanton. You've heard him on the program before. He's author of a striking book that I highly recommend called Secure Daughters, Confident Sons: How Parents Guide Their Children into Authentic Masculinity and Femininity. Stand by for that. That's coming up next. 7:07, this is Austin Hill in the Morning. Great to have you with us on the Faith Radio Network. Good morning and welcome. It's the Faith Radio Network. What is the proper goal of parenting? Well, that's probably an entire episode of our program right there to list all the objectives of good parenting. How about this? Raising secure daughters and confident sons. That's probably a good place to start, wouldn't you say? My next guest has authored a book with that title, Secure Daughters, Confident Sons. He's the director of family formation studies at Focus on the Family in Colorado Springs, also a research fellow at the Institute of Marriage and Family in Ottawa, Ontario. Glenn Stanton joins us on the guest line. Glenn Stanton, welcome to the Faith Radio Network in Austin Hill in the Morning. Good to talk to you, sir.
Hey, Austin, it's good to be with you, and thank you for having me.
Always a pleasure to hear your voice. Secure Daughters, Confident Sons. Wow, this is a great title. It certainly captivates my mind as a parent. What got you started with a working title like that? What sort of need were you trying to address when you set out to write this?
Well, primarily it's centered in, I think, what's a big, big issue today, and that is just boys and girls, I mean, and the difference there. How do we take little boys and grow them into good men, and how do we take little girls and grow them into good women, and what does that even mean? And primarily in the idea of there are a bunch of different ways for a good man to be a good man and a bunch of different ways for a good woman to be a good woman. You know, there's not this kind of black and white, okay, this is what a man is, this is what a woman is. And parents need to know that as they're raising their little boys and little girls. And basically it's about helping them become confident and secure in who they are, how God wired them to be, the unique individual that he made them to be. And then how we as parents, mothers and fathers, as sex distinct parents, how do we engage in that? How do we participate in that as men and women? And how do we contribute? What is our special role there?
Glenn Stanton, I note your carefully chosen words there, sex distinct parents or gender distinct parents. You're articulating an idea that I believe is quite biblical, quite historic, the idea that fathers, men who are fathers, they bring something very unique and distinct to the parenting equation. And mothers who are female, they bring something very distinct and separate apart from the men. Tell us about that.
Well, it's interesting. I mean, you know, even as you're saying that, you can think if this were, 30 years ago, people changing the dial like, okay, tell me people, need oxygen to live. I mean, it just sounds so obvious, right? But today this is being so tremendously challenged in the idea, well, people are just people and gender and sex doesn't really matter. Well, it does matter. And this is, this is just not an advice book at all. This is really a research book where it's one of the books that has taken me the longest to write because of just all the information that's out there in the research showing us that dads parent in a particular way and moms parent in a particular way. And what's curious is that often creates, disagreement among mothers and fathers. Why can't he do it like I do it? Why can't she do it like I do it? But the research says that both of those different ways are necessary and that our children benefit from both of these different ways. And then the book is, just chock full of examples of just what I mean by that, and then how children, boys and girls, benefit from mom and dad's different ways of parenting.
Glenn Stanton, author of the book Secure Daughters, Confident Sons, How Parents Guide Their Children into Authentic Masculinity and Femininity. He's on our guest line here on the Faith Radio Network. Glenn, I'm wondering, are you writing or did you write this book in such a way to address an observed problem on your behalf? In other words, are we raising daughters that are insecure in our culture and sons who are not confident? Is that part of the motivation here?
Well, that's hugely part of the motivation, because it's you're right. I mean, if children aren't getting these basic things that they need, being raised by a man, being raised by a woman, as men and women, then, they tend to grow up with a bit of a lack there. And daughters need that security. I mean, that's one of the things that is true about femininity is they want to be protected. They want to be cared for. They want to know that that they're secure. Boys want to be confident. They want to know that they've got what it takes, that they can solve the problem. You think about any hero of a boy, it's the guy who goes out and does it, gets it done. And that doesn't have to be like a John Wayne type. It can be, like even a Bill Gates type, I mean, again, there's different ways of being a good man, but each of those guys went out and, tamed the wild, and they did what they had to do and they created something new and they solved problems and things like that. And boys want to know how to do that. They want to know how to change the landscape, how to fix things, how to make things better, how to help other people.
Glenn Stanton, it strikes me that at least over the last decade or so, there has been this conversation going on in some circles anyway, within the evangelical Christian community, perhaps in the Catholic Christian community as well, about how maybe these substantive and very historically grounded ideas about masculinity don't come up, at least not often enough, in church circles. I remember being at a men's group meeting at a particular evangelical church, it's probably 6 or 8 years ago, where a gentleman got up and stood up and spoke, and he said, you know, for all of my life in church, I've been taught all the things that I'm not supposed to do. I've been defined by who I am not. I don't cuss. I don't look at women lustfully. I don't drink in excess. I don't smoke. I don't hurt anybody's feelings. I don't offend. I don't angry. I don't. I'm trying to figure out, who has God made me to be? Who am I? What do I do? And I think there's probably some truth to that, and there's been some other authors who've written about that subject. Are you attempting to address maybe a shortcoming, if you will, in the Christian community and add to the broader discussion here?
You know what, Austin, that's very, very well said, and that's exactly right. Men know what not to be, but we don't know, what we should be. In fact, you should be a good man is one of the most nonsensical statements that we have out there today, because we just don't know what that means. And it's exactly as you said. And that is exactly what I'm writing about. But there's another angle to that. And to be honest, I am in a way responding to or arguing against some of the manhood books out there that say, well, a man is a man that goes out into the wild. A man is a man that, you know, does outdoor activities that are dangerous. There are a lot of men that are good men that just simply don't do that. Mm-hmm. And they can be good men. So it's not that a good man is a particular stereotype of a man. A good man is a man, and this may be a little bit simplistic, but I think it's largely true. A man does what needs to be done in the way that it needs to be done at the time that it needs doing. You think about, we celebrated manhood at 9/11. We saw very clearly men doing what men do. It wasn't stereotypical. It wasn't like, action movies. It was, these guys put their lives on the line. And it's interesting that nobody said, well, what about the women? How come the women can't do that kind of thing? It was the women who were saying, these guys stepped up and put their lives on the line, rushed into these buildings, cared for people, protected people. That's what men do. And, fathers need to be able to teach that to their kids. Men in this society just need to exemplify that. And, it starts with basic manners, even holding the door open for people. And that's very key that men need to understand.
Glenn Stanton, author of Secure Daughters, Confident Sons, How Parents Guide Their Children into Authentic Masculinity and Femininity. He's my guest here on the Faith Radio Network. Glenn, stand by. We'll continue in a moment. We'll ask Glenn about parenting kids into authentic masculinity and femininity, even in the midst of a culture where masculine and feminine are horribly confused. It's the Faith Radio Network. I'm Austin Hill. Don't go away. Good morning, it's 6:20. I am Austin Hill. Thank you for listening. This is the Faith Radio Network. Glenn Stanton, you're no stranger to talking about the very confusing and perplexing culture that we live in currently. And in fact, you sort of alluded to us, this discussion about authentic masculinity and femininity might have been a bizarre conversation with our parents or certainly our grandparents' generation, but it's necessary today, and here we are in the year 2014, where gender is thought to be nothing more than sort of my subjective perception about how I feel today. If I feel feminine, if I feel like a woman, if I feel like a a woman trapped in a man's body or what have you. Well, that's who I am. There is nothing absolute. There's no birth identity involved with gender any longer. It's a very subjective sort of thing. How do we go about raising kids in that sort of very confusing and perplexing cultural milieu?
Well, and you're absolutely right. And first of all, I mean, I deal a lot with that in the culture here at Focus on the Family, going out and speaking on that topic. And what's ironic about it is this whole idea is coming up at the very time when some of the most sophisticated science is telling us just the opposite, that maleness and femaleness are real things and that they are wired into our brains. There's a male and female brain. There's, you know, it's deep into our DNA, and parents need to understand that they as male parents, they as female parents are distinct things and that they have a very important role. I mean, you know, just a quick example here is even early in life, the scholars, the researchers are showing us, look at a mom and a dad when they, you know, get a new little infant, a new little toddler. The mother tends to hold the baby close to her. Mm-hmm. You know, you think about her physicality, okay? That's, you know, she holds the baby close to feed that baby, and she is just tender to that child. Now, the father is as well, but the father is so much more likely to tickle the baby, to, you know, wiggle the baby, to shake the baby. And this other odd thing that we see all over the world is throw the baby up in the air. And it, you know, it can freak mom out, but it's not just simply that dad throws the child up in the air. You've got to think about what that child is experiencing. Okay, nice, warm, close, tender with mom. That builds security. That builds comfort. That builds, you know what, somebody loves me here. To take dad, okay, he's stimulating the child, tickling the child, throwing the child up in the air. That gets their body moving. It gets them excited. But when they go up in the air, everybody knows the first couple of times that that happens, they, you know, just stop breathing. They gasp like, oh, my goodness, this world is a scary place. But then they come back down into dad's arms, and what happens? They always giggle.
Mm-hmm.
And if they can start talking, they say, again, what they have just learned is to take a risk. And now they come down, and they thought, that risk was awesome. You know, it's there's a whole amusement park industry based on that human reality. And mothers and fathers do that in different ways. And basically, again, father's way is building confidence, building security that, you know what, I can take chances. And life is all about chances. You know what? I mean, you've got to go get on the school bus all by yourself one day. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, you've got to go approach, you know, new kids to make friends. And that, you know, those things are critical. So things that are just a normal part of mom life and dad life, we don't think, oh, they really matter. But you know what? They matter in huge ways because moms and dads are wired differently. And that's just one example among many, many that, you know, it's not just for American kids or Western kids or parents. This is true of parents all over the world.
Secure Daughters, Confident Sons. That's the title of the book by our guest Glenn Stanton. He's on the guest line here on Austin Hill in the Morning on the Faith Radio Network. At the end of the day, are things moving collectively among Christians in America? Are things moving in a positive direction, would you say, Glenn Stanton, in terms of our understandings and our applications of biblical parenting wisdom, or maybe not so much?
You know, I always try to be positive. It beats the alternative, but I'm not positive about this one. Primarily because I, unfortunately, too much of the church is buying into this idea. Well, you know, the male and female thing isn't such a big thing. We're human beings. God made us as human beings, and we're all unique and distinct. But no, at the end of the day, there's we don't have an imagination. We don't have a picture, a theology even, of what it means to be male and female. And that's a huge point. God says, let us make man in our image according to our likeness. And the next verse, in the image of God, he made them male and female. It doesn't just say in the image of God, he made them human, he made them, but male and female. There is something deep, beautiful, wonderful, and even divine within humanity in the maleness and femaleness of all of them. And that is really kind of what this book is about. Although it's a practical book for parents, it's tapping us as Christians on the shoulders and really saying, okay, this thing that God said about male and female, it means incredibly wonderful, rich, deep, and very daily practical things about you as a parent and about this little child. And the child that you are raising is only one of two models. It's either a boy or a girl. And how do you, as a sex-distinct parent, raise that little boy or little girl to be a good man and a good woman one day? There is another family out there who is expecting you to do that well, because that child of yours is going to most likely be that child's spouse, and so they want that little boy, that little girl to grow up to be a good man and a good woman.
Some great, great long-term, broad-based thinking. Glenn Stanton, author of Secure Daughters, Confident Sons. Glenn, thanks for what you do. Thanks for your time this morning. We'll look forward to talking about this all-important issue again with you very, very soon.
Hey, Austin, thanks for having me on. I appreciate being with your listeners.
This is Austin Hill in the Morning on the Faith Radio Network. I'm Austin Hill. Thank you for being with us on the Faith Radio Network. In just about 8 minutes from now, we'll tell you about the good news involving a woman named Miriam Ibrahim. It's quite a miraculous story. Connecting Faith. You hear that weekdays at noon Central Time here on the Faith Radio Network. Yesterday, host Neil Stavem talked to Brian Paulus of Life Action Ministries. They discussed the amazing work of the Holy Spirit all across the United States of America. Believe it or not, let's listen in.
It begins with repentance. And again, the illustration seems so simple, but in our own families, that if our children repent, we're so eager to respond to that. And then to remember from where we have fallen, it says there. And that means, where did we lose that sense of God's presence and realness and power in our lives? And then restore the things we did at first. That's the discipline side of maintaining that intimacy with God. And that's the practical means of spending time with Him. And what it once was like, what did I do when I first dated my wife when I was so madly in love with her, you know? And redoing, restoring those things again.
Talking with Byron Paulus today, we're talking about the One Cry Movement, a nationwide call for spiritual awakening. You know, we think about our nation, which we've just, you know, touched on a few things, and it's easy to sort of just get derailed on you know, the concerns, the horizontal, and not focus on the vertical. But yeah, I think part of this, we're in such a cynical society, and it seems like doubt is more prevalent than faith. So maybe share the example of Romania just as a way in which, you know, gives us some hope that God could, in fact, there could be changes beyond our comprehension in matter of days or weeks.
Yeah, and I think what takes away some of the cynicism, at least in my heart, is when we do look at history, whether it's the awakenings in our nation or others in the Welsh Revival in 1904 and 05, where they said things were just hopeless and helpless and nothing could happen and God intervened. And I did take a trip to Romania right after the fall of communism. And I'll never forget a driver that was assigned to us was bringing us from Hungary into Romania. And I was just kind of dying to ask him a question because of how dramatic of a shift occurred. I mean, totally changed overnight almost. And I just asked his name was Florian. I said, Florian, did you ever think that Romania would no longer, would ever be a free country again? He said, absolutely not. And I said, what about a month ago when you started hearing what was happening in other countries around you in the former Soviet Union? There was starting to be a little bit of stirring and so forth. I said, did you think then that maybe Romania would someday be free? And he says, never. And I said, what about a week before? And other things were beginning to happen. Did you think? And he says, no, you don't understand. The Securitate, he said, the government, the repression, he said, it was so tight. He said, there's no way I thought it could ever happen. And I said, well, certainly, 24 hours beforehand. And even within your country, you started to see some rumblings of change. And did you think? And he said, no, not even then. I thought it was impossible. Within 24 hours, the total system collapsed, and freedom was born, And that was just a reminder to me that nothing is too difficult for God, that we may think it's hopeless, but God is bigger than every system, every government, all the securitate of the world. And I just think sometimes we lose hope because we lose faith because we don't remember who God is.
And then to focus on hope, is there a scripture that comes to mind all the time when you want to talk about hope? Where do you keep coming back to when you think about God's word and the call to cry up?
Well, there'd be a couple of them, but one would certainly be in Isaiah, I think it's chapter 39. When the enemy comes in like a flood, the Lord will raise up a banner. And one rendering of that says a raging flood against him. So it's really with the darker it gets as the enemy comes in, that's when God raises up, sheds his light, extends his hand, and I believe gives us his heart if we will seek him. And just the phrase in Hosea 10:12, it is time to seek the Lord. Until he comes and reigns righteous, not if he comes, but it's time to seek the Lord until he comes and reigns righteousness upon us. And I think we give up too early that we need to cry out, not in some 3-year program or plan or initiative, but until he comes and reigns righteousness upon us.
That's Brian Paulus of Life Action Ministries, an interview guest on Connecting Faith with Neil Stavem. Weekdays at noon on the Faith Radio Network. Now, you can hear the full audio of the discussion at myfaithradio.com. Coming up today at noon, host Joe Rathmanner welcomes Dr. Jay Budicheski to talk about his new book. Are you ready for this? I gotta run out and buy a copy of this. How to Stay Christian in College. Wow, there's a challenge for you. That's coming up on Connecting Faith today at 12 noon here on the Faith Radio Network. It's 6:33. I'm Austin Hill. We break for news when we come back. Some very good news about a lady named Miriam Ibrahim. It's truly a miraculous story. We'll tell you about it next. Good morning, 6:38. Welcome to it. It's the Faith Radio Network. I'm Austin Hill, and still to come, we're going to take on some of the big issues, big global issues that really do matter to our world and to Christians, not only here in the United States, but around the globe. Some rather grim news, I would say, or at least very unfortunate, disturbing news about the country of Russia. You may have heard some about this, but Russia has, I guess, lived up to some the worst of suspicions that some of us have had here in the United States. I'll put it that way. David Aikman will join us in just about an hour from now. David Aikman, noted journalist, historian, professor at Patrick Henry College in Virginia. This is a man who has lived vast chunks of major historical events over the course of the last half century or so. He'll weigh in on what we know now about Russia and perhaps its efforts to realign the Warsaw Pact nations. The former Soviet Union is perhaps getting the band back together, to put it in modern-day vernacular. We'll check in with David Aikman about that at 7:35 this morning. Also, in just about half an hour from now, our great friend Bill Arnold, host of Real Recovery, heard Sunday evenings at 5 p.m. Central Time on Faith Radio. Bill joins us this morning to give us a sneak preview of what they're talking about on Real Recovery, an all-important program and just a tremendous outreach that is bringing the message of redemption to people struggling with some of the worst of inflictions. And, you know, as I like to see the Real Recovery program, and I guess we could call it the recovery movement within evangelical churches, at the end of the day, as I see it, we are all in need of recovery. Some of us struggle with afflictions and negative and destructive behavioral patterns and attachments to sin that are more evident than others. That's really the only difference. There, but for the grace of God, go I, that I don't have any substance abuse problems or chemical addictions or what have you. Doesn't mean that I'm not everybody's in need of redemption and God's grace as anybody else who might be in a 12-step group. So I know the value of the 12 steps and the recovery ministries that are going on in churches around the country. So stand by for Bill Arnold coming up at about 7:10 this morning. I want to speak to a name that you have probably heard before. What do you think of when you hear the name Miriam Ibrahim? Miriam Ibrahim. Now, if you peruse any, I guess, Christian news publication online, a couple of my favorites, ChristianPost.com and ChristianityToday.com, if you look at either one of those publications, Christianity Today still has a hard copy magazine, if you look in there, probably over the last, I'd even say over the last 6 months or so, you have seen these very striking photos of a very happy, attractive young couple. They are black. They are both of African descent. You've probably seen that photo, rather formal photo taken, obviously, very professionally. You have the very beautiful Miriam Ibrahim in her white wedding gown and her husband dressed up in, I don't recall if it's a tuxedo, formal suit or what have you, but you know, it's a professionally done wedding photo, basically. They're all dressed up for the big day, and they're posing, and they've got bright smiles on their face, and they just look incredibly happy. And you've probably seen that photo with some kind of headline attached to it that reads something to the effect of, Christian mother sentenced to death for her faith. Let me read you this kind of an encyclopedic description here of Miriam Ibrahim. Miriam Ibrahim is a Sudanese woman, first sentenced to death because of her Christian faith and then released. Miriam Ibrahim was arrested during her second pregnancy and gave birth to a girl in prison on May 27th of 2014. Miriam Ibrahim was born to a Muslim father who left her her Ethiopian Orthodox mother to raise the child from early childhood. Miriam Ibrahim was raised in her mother's faith and married a Christian man. Now, what has largely been ignored by most news outlets around the United States of America, and I didn't learn this until, oh, probably 2 months ago, Miriam Ibrahim, while she is of Ethiopian ethnic descent and was from the Sudan, she married a Christian man who is from the United States. Her husband is a U.S. citizen. And constitutionally speaking, the two young children that she has birthed, because they are from this father, this gentleman, Daniel Wani is his name, a Christian and a U.S. citizen, because the dad is a U.S. citizen, so are those children. So here we have this woman, Miriam Ibrahim, being held captive in the Sudan and sentenced to death because she refused to abandon her Christian faith and, quote-unquote, convert to Islam. How's that for tolerance and inclusiveness and diversity in Sudan, right? Because she refused to abandon her Christianity, the mother of two young American children was likely going to be sent to death. And if that's not a cause for our U.S. federal government to get involved in, I'm not sure what is. Well, when we come back, we'll take a quick break here. I will sort of give you the rest of the story, as it were. We did see something miraculous happen. There apparently was some efforts going on behind the scenes with our U.S. Department of State, which is great. But I will tell you that the very Catholic nation of Italy, they stepped up in a big way. And Miriam Ibrahim is reunited now with her husband, who's an American, and her two small children. It's a stunning story. From the jaws of death back to life. We'll tell you about it coming up in moments. 6:45, this is Austin Hill in the Morning on the Faith Radio Network. On the Faith Radio Network, I'm Austin Hill. Thank you for listening. Still to come at about 7:10 this morning, I'll talk about real recovery. What exactly is that? It is a talk program that we hear Sunday evenings at 5 p.m. here on the Faith Radio Network with Bill Arnold, the host of the program. He'll tell us what to expect this week and what's going on within the recovery movements of the church. That said, Miriam Ibrahim. She is a very young woman born in November of 1987. She is a resident, a legal resident of the Sudan. She was sentenced to death for her Christian faith, and her great offense was marrying a Christian man, worse yet, a Christian man who is a U.S. citizen. Let me read you again more of an encyclopedic description. Miriam Ibrahim was reportedly turned into governmental authorities in her native country by one of her own relatives, who claimed that Miriam was committing adultery by marrying Daniel Wani, a Christian. She was sentenced to death on May 15, 2014, for allegedly committing apostasy from Islam, meaning that she was accused of changing religion from Islam to Christianity. The fact of the matter is she had never been a practicing Muslim, nor did she care to be, but the government of the Sudan was saying, you need to die. And I want you to listen to this this audio clip here. This is from a gentleman named Tony Perkins. Tony Perkins is with the Family Research Council and a nonprofit group in the Washington, D.C. area. This was Tony Perkins back in June of this year being interviewed on national television. This comes to us from the Fox News Channel. Listen to this description. Roll it.
For 4 months, Miriam has been shackled to the floor. Apparently, reports say that she remained shackled during giving birth, while she was giving birth earlier this week. She's in there with a 20-month-old, and as you mentioned now, about a 3 or 4 day old little girl, Maya. This is a prison that was built to contain about 100 people, and according to the UN, houses up to about 1,200 now, disease infested. And according to a UN report, again, one child a day, one infant a day dies in this prison during the summer months, which we're now entering.
Now, that was the environment that Miriam Ibrahim was living in, again, being chained to the floor. My goodness. Now, again, this lady is not a U.S. citizen, but her husband is. And as such, her two young children are U.S. citizens as well. And there is an effort undertaken here in the United States by some very thoughtful, conscientious people. Most of them, although not all of them, were Christians. They were petitioning our U.S. federal government to weigh in on this and use the power of the Department of State to get her back home. I don't think we know exactly at this point how much or how little the resources that the Department of State were deployed to make this happen. But that said, her husband, Daniel Wani, who is a U.S. citizen, he appealed his wife's death sentence on behalf of their, both of their behalves, actually. On June 24th, Miriam Ibrahim was released on the order of the Sudanese appeal court. The following day, as she and her family were set to board a plane to the United States, she was rearrested and taken back into custody. So you can imagine what, you know, an emotional cliffhanger this must have been. I mean, put yourself in that situation. This family member, or perhaps you yourself, you're sentenced to die, you're released, it's a miracle that has transpired, and then you're taken back into captivity. This went back and forth repeatedly until finally the Sudanese Foreign Ministry released her altogether. She was then holed up in the U.S. Embassy in Sudan for quite some time. After extensive negotiations, now this is what we didn't realize, after extensive negotiations between the Sudan government and the country of Italy and the United States, on the other hand, she was enabled to leave the Sudan altogether, leave the U.S. Embassy, and fly to Rome. This is a report from CNN, and Aaron, if we have the other audio here, this is a report from CNN that kind of picks up where the other report left off and explains what transpired and how she got to the Vatican. Listen to this.
Miriam Ibrahim, the Sudanese woman who was sentenced to death for refusing to renounce Christianity, arrived safely in Rome and met Pope Francis. The pontiff blessed her and thanked her for her commitment to the faith. The two talked in private for about a half an hour. It was a surprise to many that the woman showed up in Italy, as the country was never announced as being part of the plan to get her and her family out of Sudan. For the last month, she's been a protected guest of the American Embassy in Khartoum. Her ordeal with the Sudanese government had been going on for nearly a year at the time of her departure. Ibrahim was originally arrested and sentenced to death for apostasy. She'd married an American man and converted to Christianity. Sudanese courts gave her the option of reestablishing her Muslim faith or dying. The woman refused to change her religion, as she had grown up in a Christian Orthodox family and had never practiced Islam. She and her family will be flown from Italy to the United States in the coming days.
All right, that's where the report from CNN left off. We are told that she's actually in the United States with her American husband and her American citizen children as well. Miraculous story. And again, as I said, we don't know how much or how little our U.S. federal government was involved in this. What is very apparent, though, and this is, I guess, the big surprise in it all, was the government of Italy stepping in and acting as sort of a third-party envoy of sorts. I mean, that was quite profound, and they sort of stepped in and provided an escape route to get her out of the U.S. Embassy building in Sudan and to safe haven in the free world. Very serious stuff. I will tell you, however, that there is another gentleman, another guy, who is our fellow American and our brother Christian. His name is Saeed Abedini. With a name like that, that may not strike you as though he's an American. He's actually an immigrant from Iran, but he is absolutely a naturalized U.S. citizen, and he's a Christian pastor with the Calvary Chapel Church denomination, Pastor Saeed Abedini, still being held captive in the country of Iran, still very much worthy of our prayers. We could maybe very well call upon our God and see another miracle like this happen, but there is still a family suffering with their husband, their father, their son being held captive in a very, very vicious governmental situation around the world. Pastor Saeed Abedini, still in Iran. More on that coming up, 6:54. It's Austin Hill in the Morning on the Faith Radio Network. Thanks for listening. We continue in moments. On the Faith Radio Network, Live the Promise airs weekday afternoons live, real-time, 3 to 5 p.m. Central Time with your host, Susie Larson. Yesterday, Susie spoke with Pat Palau, wife of famed, noted evangelist Luis Palau, about having a biblical response to a prodigal child. Listen to this.
Pat, how did you do that? Here you've got your hubby, and you've got this public ministry, and we tend to either make a formula out of parenting, or we expect... If you're doing that, our kids should be a certain way. How did you sort of detach from any public perception and just let this be your personal battle that you wrestled out with God? I mean, was that a hard process for you?
I think it was, because most of us feel, if I do this, if I train him up in the way he should go, he will, you know, if you follow biblical principles, they are bound to do, they are bound to yield their lives to Christ. But that's a funny dichotomy, because the truth is, all of us come one by one in a myriad of different ways, but it's always a personal decision that is not based on what someone else does.
Well, we each have our own will, and so there has to be a time when we surrender our own will, right?
Exactly. We don't come in groups. Someday we will stand before God as individuals, and I will respond to the things, you know, that weaknesses or neglect or anything that, Lord, I should have moved more quickly. I have those things to answer, but every child and every family on the face of the earth will deal with God once and for all for their own response to the light that they had.
That's Live the Promise with Susie Larson. Pat Palau, her guest yesterday. Coming up this afternoon on Susie's program, she'll talk with Pastor Jeff Mannion as they'll be discussing how one develops a hunger for God. That's Live the Promise with Susie Larson. Weekday afternoons, 3 to 5 p.m. real time, Central Time, here on the Faith Radio Network. And, of course, as always, you can find the full audio, and I should say excerpted audio as well, of Live the Promise with Susie Larson, as well as all our programs here on the Faith Radio Network. This one included, and of course, Connecting Faith with Neil Statham as well. MyFaithRadio.com, our place in cyberspace. That's our mobile-friendly website, MyFaithRadio.com. Coming up into the second hour, talk about the turns of events in Eastern Europe. This thing called the Cold War that our parents and grandparents' generation fought so diligently to be victorious with? Could there be a new Cold War stirring up? And what does that mean for us in America? What does it mean for the plight of Christians around the world and the cause of Christ's church? Talk about that and much more just ahead. I'm Austin Hill. This is the Faith Radio Network. We pause for news.
Start your day connecting faith to life. It's Austin Hill in the morning.
Good morning, 7:05. Welcome to it. It's the Faith Radio Network. We're here weekday morning, 6 till 8. This is where we seek to be informative, challenging, hopeful, and helpful as you get your day started. Hope your weekend is, I hope you can anticipate and are looking forward to a productive weekend. It's been a harrowing week in many ways across the United States of America and around the country. But here's hoping you and your family are doing well. Still to come, let's talk about Real Recovery, shall we? Now, Real Recovery is the name of a program that airs Sunday evenings here on the Faith Radio Network. But Real Recovery is also a movement within the church movements here in the United States. And it's been brewing and been unfurling for, at least 25 years or so. And I happen to be a big supporter of it. If there's a recovery ministry in your church, or maybe you're a part of that, the kind of transformation and healing that a good recovery group in your church can help facilitate. That said, for some people, this idea of people gathering together to share their experience, their strength, and their hope, their struggles, and doing so in the context of being very, very candid, maybe even at times painfully and awkwardly candid and transparent about their darkest parts of their lives, for some people, that's a very difficult terrain to navigate. So coming up in just a few moments, we'll check in with Bill Arnold. He hosts Real Recovery Sunday evenings. It's a broadcast here on the Faith Radio Network. I'll see what Bill has in store for us and get an update on that ongoing movement within the broader church. Also, in just about half an hour from now, our great friend David Aikman. This is a man who is an esteemed award-winning journalist. He is a historian by every stretch of the imagination, PhD in history. Still reports, still covers the big events of the world, and also is a professor at Patrick Henry College in Virginia. David Aikman will weigh in and offer some perspective, historical and otherwise, on some events that we've seen transpire in Eastern Europe, in particular in Russia with respect to Ukraine. Just really over the last, there's been stunning developments in the last 72 hours. They have profound ramifications for us as Americans, and most certainly as Christians, and for the cause of the church worldwide. I will check in with him coming up at about 7:35 this morning. Stand by. We continue momentarily. It's the Faith Radio Network at 7:06. Welcome to Friday. I'm Austin Hill. On the Faith Radio Network, and thank you for being here. We appreciate you listening. We appreciate your support. You can always find us at myfaithradio.com. Sunday evenings at 5 p.m. Central Time on Faith Radio, you hear Real Recovery, hosted by Bill Arnold. Bill joins us this morning to give us a sneak preview of what's coming up this weekend and also to address a very, very serious topic. Bill, good morning. Welcome back to our morning program. Good to talk to you.
Austin, great to hear your voice. We've got a really fun episode coming up this Sunday. We have Sheriff Matt Bostrom's coming. And I'm always it's a little nerve-wracking inviting the law into the studio. I don't know if he's coming
wait,
in.
Wait a minute. You mean, this is not over the phone. This is in-house. That's
he's
all the more unnerving.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
Okay.
So I don't know if he's coming in to do an interview or if I've been set up in some kind of sting operation.
Yes.
Because,
well,
you know, I know George Fraser, the co-host, he took, the tags off his mattresses, 3 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And he might be getting hauled off in handcuffs Sunday.
Well, see, and those things are never to be removed.
That's what I've heard.
Bill, you and George should know better. Now, on a serious note, though.
Austin, he also has a bootleg copy of Rocky Five in his house.
Okay,
so
well,
I think he's going away for a long time.
And the DVD stuff, you know, it has that that little disclaimer at the beginning that says, you know, don't duplicate this. He should have known better, as they say.
Exactly.
On a serious note, though, Bill Arnold, when you bring a law enforcement official, yay, even an elected county sheriff, into your program, Real Recovery, there are some very serious subjects that you're going to address. I know that the terrain of illegal drugs that are infiltrating really every corner of the United States of America, that terrain is always changing. And my understanding is you and the sheriff will talk about some of the new drugs that are inflicting people and ensnaring people all over the country. Give us an idea of what to expect there.
Well, he has got the inside scoop on what's getting onto the streets, what's getting into the hands of kids, what kids are experimenting with, what to look for, what to be suspicious of, how to make sure that you're taking care of drugs that might be expired, make sure you get rid of them. I mean, opiates and painkillers, I think they collected, I don't know, several tons of them recently, just expired medicine. That's all very dangerous stuff, and it's gotten to be a very serious issue with kids because they're getting into experimentation at a very young age.
Indeed they are. Bill Arnold, host of Real Recovery, Sunday evenings at 5 p.m. here on the Faith Radio Network. He's on our guest line here on our morning program. What does this mean? Bill, it's one thing to talk about the new illegal drugs that kids are getting into, the things that are being sold illegally out on the streets. What does this mean for individuals and families within the church? That's where you and your program step in. You're speaking to people really where the rubber meets the road, where a mom or a dad or even a spouse says, yikes, there's an addiction problem under our own roof. Tell us about that process.
Well, I think we're basically a little nervous about talking about it because it's a reflection of some possible dysfunction in our family. And you get nervous to say, gosh, we've got a problem with our son or our daughter. But if we don't talk about it, things are going to get much worse. And without the restraining power of the Holy Spirit, we're all in big trouble because we're not wired to resist temptation.
Mm-hmm. Do you sense an ongoing growth in terms of the receptiveness, the openness in churches in our area and really all over the country to bringing in a 12-step group or a recovery ministry? It certainly seems to me that that's been growing pretty steadily. I remember back in the day, 25, 30 years ago, where you go to an evangelical church in America and you say, somebody in my family has a depression problem or a drug problem or a sexual problem or what have you, and people might get real uncomfortable, but they'll ultimately tell you, we don't know what you're talking about here. That doesn't happen here. Today it seems very different, but it seems like the movement is continuing to grow in healthy ways. Comment on that if you would.
Well, fortunately, I think there is a lot more discussion, a lot more dialogue. There are places and churches where we can go and have much more honest conversation. Some of the fears that still exist is if I go and share something in my church, will I end up on five different prayer chains under the form of what we call gossip?
Mm-hmm.
You know, you want confidentiality. You also want to be able to be completely honest with people and be open. I think that's one of the advantages that the 12-step programs have is you can just really go unload your stuff. And I think some people are more reluctant to do that in churches. And I think church should be where you go unload your stuff.
Bill Arnold, host of Real Recovery, Sunday evenings, 5 p.m. on the Faith Radio Network, is with us, giving us an idea of what to expect coming up this Sunday evening. Again, if you just joined us, Bill, we'll be talking to a law enforcement officer, a county sheriff, about some of the new street drugs that are inflicting people and ensnaring people. Bill, you mentioned a few moments ago this is something to watch for with our kids, which it most certainly is, but it's certainly not limited to teenagers and young adults.
Well, heavens no. And there is, you know, the whole idea that if you have an addiction of any kind, and most of us, you know, always want to change the way we feel. Wouldn't that fair to say, Austin? I mean, I got up this morning, I wanted coffee. I wanted to change the way I feel. That's
sure.
Part of the issue of how such a slippery slope any kind of addiction can become. But, you know, if you try to do it apart from Christ, I mean, it's like, to quote Mike Tyson, he said, you know, everyone has a plan until they get punched in the mouth. And I think that's really what recovery apart from Christ is, you know, you're trying to do it if you're doing it on your own.
Yeah.
You have to be,
Yeah, you're cheerful.
Sure. Bill, speak to the pastors that are listening in on our conversation right now. More and more I encounter pastors, clergymen that are behind the pulpits on Sundays, and they really, really want to do right by those struggling with addiction afflictions, whether it's drugs or a sexual problem or a spending addiction or what have you. They're trying to learn more. They're trying to accommodate. What would you want pastors to know in that regard?
I would want pastors to make sure they let people know that there are plenty of people in the church that they can have conversations with, and they can have them today. I mean, try to have a network of support in the church, build a team that can make people available to have conversations, you know, Christ-centered conversations where we can start to address issues, help people get evaluated if that's the problem, or just come alongside people for support, because we're avoiding church. You know, people run away from God when they get caught up in any kind of addiction, and we need them to know that the only refuge you have is in Christ, not away from Him.
Bill Arnold, host of Real Recovery, Sunday evenings, 5 p.m. He'll be here this Sunday night. And again, a law enforcement officer joining them in studio, Bill and his co-host, to talk about some of the new threats out on the streets with some very, very dangerous drugs that are being bought and sold all illegally. Bill, appreciate what you do. Good to talk to you. We'll talk again soon.
You bet, Austin. Thanks.
Have a great day. 7:16. It's the Faith Radio Network. Thank you for being here. I'm Austin Hill. Still to come, a Christian perspective on events, tumultuous and otherwise, in Eastern Europe. We'll talk about it all coming up. Stay with us. On the Faith Radio Network. Good morning and welcome to our program. My name is Austin Hill. Glad to be with you weekday morning 6 till 8. Coming up at about 7:35 this morning, we will be joined once again by our great friend David Aikman, a historian, a journalist, a foreign affairs commentator based in the Washington, D.C. area. This man, if you're not familiar with him, David Aikman has lived and covered for a variety of different news media outlets around the world some of the most striking world events of your lifetime and mine. And he is a professor at Patrick Henry College in Virginia, among the various other things that he does. And, of course, he has that super cool British accent. I mean, doesn't that just kind of jump out at everybody? I can't tell for sure if it's a British accent or maybe he lived for a time in South Africa. South Africans oftentimes have that British-sounding sort of accent. Anyway, he speaks with authority, but we appreciate his insight and his wisdom as well. PhD in history and a very devoutly Christian man as well. He'll give us some insights as to what is going on. I think it's the word revolution probably applies to what's going on in Eastern Europe with the nation of Russia. I don't know how much more evidence we need here in the United States to begin understanding that Russia is operating with the intent of realigning the Warsaw Pact nations and realigning the former Soviet Union. Something that in the U.S. we used to refer to as the evil empire, and a lot of blood was spilt and a lot of our money was spent to try to bring it down. We did bring it down, but it is being resurrected, all within about 20 years' time. So stand by for that. David Aikman joins us at about 7:35 this morning. Are you ready for something truly miraculous? I mentioned this earlier this morning, but it bears repeating. Let me tell you about a woman named Miriam Ibrahim. Miriam Ibrahim. Now, you probably, if you read any Christian publications at all, if you look at our websites with any regularity at all, myfaithradio.com, over the last, I'll say 3 or 4 months or so, you probably got accustomed to seeing this photo, very striking photo of seemingly a very, very happy, beautiful young couple. They are both black. They are dressed in their formal wedding gowns, wedding attire, I should say. Miriam Ibrahim in her beautiful white wedding gown. Her husband, he's dressed in, I don't recall exactly if he's in a tuxedo or a formal coat and tie, but they're posing, and it's obviously a professionally done wedding photo, and you look at that and say, well, there's a nice, happy couple. And the contrast of this beautiful photo, great-looking couple, the contrast of the beautiful photo and the headline that reads, Christian mother sentenced to die for her faith. Just a total train wreck of a clash. Beautiful photo, really, really ugly headline. Well, that was real. Miriam Ibrahim is a woman from the Sudan. She was raised by a father who was a Orthodox Christian, and I mean Orthodox with the big O, the old traditional Orthodox Christian church. She is a resident of Sudan. She was actually brought, charges were brought against her by one of her own family members because she married a man who was an American citizen, for one thing, but worse yet, was a Christian. A family member turned Miriam Ibrahim into the government of Sudan because she violated the dictates, apparently, of her Islamic faith. She was regarded as an apostate. You don't go out and marry somebody who is a Christian, for heaven's sakes. That's disastrous. Well, the Sudanese government got after her, and she was sentenced to die at the hand of the Sudanese government back on May 14th of this year. Now, I want to play this audio again. This is a gentleman named Tony Perkins. He's with a nonprofit group called the Family Research Council in Northern Virginia. And he appeared on national television all over the place. This audio soundbite happens to come from the Fox News channel. Tony Perkins describing the conditions in which young Miriam Ibrahim was living. And by the way, this is a woman who had just given birth to a newborn baby. And just to connect the dots even further, Miriam Ibrahim's husband is a U.S. citizen, and subsequently, her child is a U.S. citizen. This is the mom. Granted, she's Sudanese, but this is a mom of a U.S. citizen baby. Listen to the description from Tony Perkins of the conditions she was living in a Sudanese prison. Roll it.
For 4 months, Miriam has been shackled to the floor. Apparently, reports say that she remained shackled during giving birth, while she was giving birth earlier this week. She's in there with a 20-month-old, and as you mentioned now, about a 3 or 4 day old little girl, Maya. Now, this is a prison that was built to contain about 100 people, and according to the UN, houses up to about 1,200 now, disease infested, and according to a UN report, again, one child a day, one infant a day dies in this prison during the summer months, which we're now entering.
All right. So this is a young mom who otherwise should be directly connected with her young child. I mean, this is just intuitive stuff for us. When a newborn infant comes into the world, that child needs a lot of touch time, a lot of one-on-one time with mom, right? Mom is chained to the floor, according to what Tony Perkins described, and she's sentenced to die. Well, the long and short of it is that I believe through a lot of prayer from Christians all over the world, from the United States included, a lot of thoughtful American Christians petitioning our U.S. federal government, our State Department got involved on some level. We don't know how little or how much, but the U.S. Department of State and the government of Italy, they conspired behind the scenes. And Miriam Ibrahim, who has been in a U.S. embassy for the past several weeks in safe haven, has now been returned to the United States, thanks in no small part to Italy, as I said. We'll let you hear the final synopsis when we come back. This is quite miraculous, and it matters. When one part of the body suffers, the whole body suffers, right? We know that scripturally. We'll continue in just a moment. 725, this is the Faith Radio Network. I'm Austin Hill. It's 7:35 on the Faith Radio Network. I'm Austin Hill here weekday morning 6 till 8. Thank you for being here. Thank you for your support of the Faith Radio Network. Find us anytime on our mobile-friendly website. It's myfaithradio.com. Hope you had a good news update on your local broadcast station there just moments ago. Our network news carrier, SRN News, their lead story was about yet further confirmation from our U.S. federal government that indeed the government, the military of Russia, is pummeling the otherwise sovereign nation of Ukraine. This is the country that arguably was invaded by Russia only a matter of about 5 or 6 weeks ago. There is, I believe, every indication, and even for skeptics who think I'm crazy, I think there's growing belief that Russia has every intention of realigning the nations of what was once known as the Warsaw Pact. Realigning, recreating, if you will, the former Soviet Union. Joining us to talk about it, a man who reported as a journalist on the Soviet Union many, many times before. He is an historian, PhD in history, professor at Patrick Henry College in Virginia, and a man who offers sound analysis, all stemming from a biblical worldview on the events of our lifetimes. David Eggman, back on the guest line here on the Faith Radio Network. David, always good to talk to you. Thanks very much for your time this morning. Give us your assessment of what we're seeing happening with Russia.
Well, good morning, Austin. Thank you for having me on. Well, Russia is clearly nibbling away in big chunks on eastern Ukraine. And it's part of a general effort, as you correctly pointed out, by Putin to expand the powers of Russia over geographic space that formerly included the Soviet Union. We saw this started off with the Russian encouragement of Russian separatists, ethnic Russian separatists living in Ukraine, to take over the Crimea, which was a big prize for Russia. The Crimea had originally belonged to Russia, and then Khrushchev gave it back to the Ukraine. Now Russia wants to take it back. And Putin has incredible support from Russians for this kind of brazen act of Russian nationalism.
Yeah, now, David, I want you to focus in on that for a moment. I'm so glad you brought that up. David Eggman with us on the guest line here on the Faith Radio Network. My sense is, David, that for a lot of us in the United States, a lot of Westerners, we look at Russia and say, there's no way they would support this. This is crazy. Why would they want a totalitarian country? Freedom is so good, and freedom was so hard fought, and the battle was won. Why would they want to go backwards? The fact of the matter is that Russia, as a government, as a country, as a society, really hasn't worked out all that well, at least not as I see it anyway, certainly not economically, since the collapse of the former Soviet Union and communism. And by every indication, as I read it anyway, those folks are quite happy to go back to the good old days of communism. Give us your assessment of that, if you would, please.
Well, they don't exactly want to go back to the what was called the era of stagnation, the really slow-moving bureaucratic morass that was the Soviet Union just before it collapsed. They don't want to go back to that. They don't want to go back to Stalin's time with people being arrested in the middle of the night all over the place. But they do want to go back to an authoritarian time when dissent is limited, there's only a certain amount of freedom of press. And the thing about Putin is he restored order in the early 2000s, after Boris Yeltsin, who had faithfully maintained the democracy in Russia, Boris Yeltsin had not kept the country free of crime, and there were terrible organized crime gangs. People were being blown up in the streets of Moscow by rival gangs. The oligarchs were in charge, the big tycoons, and they were completely out of control. So Putin swept in, clamped down on the oligarchs, put several of them in jail, and then he showed his muscle by sending a new military force to crush the rebellion in Chechnya, which was sort of getting very uppity again. So on top of that, Putin then succeeded in really kick-starting the Russian economy based on the high price of petroleum, which he was getting out of Russian territory.
Mm-hmm.
Russians experience a dramatic climb in their living standards, and they gave all the credit for that to Putin, as well as the credit for cracking down on organized crime. So Putin was seen as a man who restores order, yet at the same time creates prosperity.
Very interesting. David Eggman,
that was a very good formula.
It's fascinating the way you're articulating this. David Aikman, he's with Patrick Henry College. He is a professor there. He's an historian and also a journalist. He's with us on the Faith Radio Network. What does this mean for America in the West? That's the question that comes to my mind, David. I've watched these things probably more carefully than most. I guess kind of geeky that way, but that's part of what I do. I watch world events and try to understand them. And I have seen not only Vladimir Putin making overtures that would appear as though Russia is trying to realign the Warsaw Pact nations from back in the day. He's also made some overtures, as far as I can tell, towards the government of China to try to get the entire world to trade in a currency other than the American dollar, to try to secure trade agreements for energy, natural gas, oil, and those kinds of things. He's trying very directly to undermine the free world economically, so far as I can tell. Give us your assessment of those things, if you would.
Well, I think that's true. I think he wants to destabilize the primacy of the U.S. dollar as a general form of reserve currency in the world, because he knows as long as the dollar is uppermost, the United States will probably remain preeminent amongst global trading nations and will have continued power. But you have to understand about the Russians, Austin, that they are very susceptible to a suspicion that the United States has done nothing for the last 250-plus years but to exercise its brains on humiliating and bringing down Russia.
Mm-hmm. That's their perspective, you're telling us.
Yes, they have a real inferiority complex. I mean, what you're hearing on Russian news programs in the last few days is the Ukraine airline shoot-down crisis is a creation of the West. Either we were trying to shoot down Putin's plane, or we allowed the Ukrainians to try to shoot down Putin's plane, and we created the mess by encouraging the liberals in Ukraine to protest against the government of Yanukovych and overturned it. And overturning Yanukovych, a close Kremlin ally, was a real red flag to Putin. He thought, my gosh, if they can do that in Ukraine, what will happen here? Maybe we'll get some guys trying to get rid of me. So it was almost a personal political threat to Putin.
Okay.
And he lashed out by sort of extending this policy of slow encroachment of Ukraine by encouraging ethnic Russians to cross the border into Ukraine and indeed take with them very sophisticated weaponry.
David Aikman with us on the guest line here on the Faith Radio Network at 743. David, stand by. When we come back, I want to ask you very pointedly, with all that you've described, what's going on in the Eastern Europe region of the world, what does this mean for the cause of Christ Church, for the cause of Christianity? Why should we care deeply about this as Christians in the United States of America? We'll continue with David Aikman in just a moment. This is the Faith Radio Network. I'm Austin Hill. Don't go anywhere. Good morning, 747. Thank you for listening to the Faith Radio Network. I'm Austin Hill, weekday mornings, 6 to 8 Central Time. That's when I'm here, and I appreciate you listening. David Aikman, we appreciate him being with us. He is a journalist and historian, a professor at Patrick Henry College in Virginia, and he's with us on the guest line as we talk about, I want to say it's the beginnings of a revolution in Eastern Europe. David, I don't know if you agree with that description, but tell us what your thoughts are on revolution in Russia. And again, as I posed the question earlier, what does this mean for the cause of the church here on earth? And what does this mean for American Christians in particular? What's going on with Russia sort of realigning its communist tendencies and powers?
Well, it's a very complex sort of revolutionary development. I actually wouldn't quite use the term revolution, but that, because that always implies a direction in the left. And in Ukraine, it was a movement against the left, against the sort of bureaucratic regime of Yanukovych, against his close alliance with Russia, which seemed to threaten to reestablish the Russian Empire. So the protesters and dissidents who overthrew the Ukrainian government several months ago were, in effect, demonstrating a sort of counter-revolution. They didn't want close ties with Russia. In fact, every opinion poll has shown that the Ukrainians want to have much closer ties with Western Europe. And that runs headlong against Putin's desire to reintegrate the geographic space of Russian control of the Soviet Union. And if he can't reconstruct the Soviet Union, at least reconstruct a new version of the Russian Empire. Mm. And that is the process he seems to be pushing forward.
So what does this mean for the cause of the Christian gospel in the various regions of Eastern Europe?
Well, the Russian Orthodox Church, which is very popular in Russia as a sort of cultural and religious entity, has been historically very intolerant of Roman Catholics and Protestants, and particularly of evangelistic efforts. And so if there is a spread of Russian influence any further into the countries of Eastern Europe, I think Protestant and Catholic groups might begin to fear some kind of restrictiveness. I don't think that's started to happen yet, but any time the Russians exert their influence oppressively on their neighbors, religious groups suffer eventually.
What do American Christians need to be mindful of in this context, David?
Well, I think they need to be mindful that the display of sort of fairly brutal big power nationalism that Putin is showing has a great threat to freedom of religious activity, freedom of the gospel. Don't forget, the Russian Orthodox Church has been very repressive towards Protestant Christian evangelical groups, and I'm not saying they will try to do that in Eastern Europe, but the sense of being hemmed in by a great power that objects to any form of dissent or Protestant or protest or Protestantism is a very worrying thing for the Russians, for the Christians of Eastern Europe.
David Aikman, in the United States, Christians, we are accustomed to thinking in terms of sending missionaries to other parts of the world and doing so freely. We are a nation blessed with great resources. We can be the senders, if you will, to evangelize the world, to fulfill the Great Commission and such. It strikes me that at a time such as this, American Christians are waking up and realizing that we may not even have so much freedom here at home anymore to evangelize in our own neighborhood, for heaven's sakes. But put this in the broader context, what's going on in Eastern Europe, and square that up, if you will, match it up with our just natural tendency to say, hey, we'll take a short-term mission trip to Moscow or Ukraine or what have you. Could this become no longer an option for evangelization efforts in
the
near term?
You're absolutely right, Austin, because I know many American churches that have conducted short-term evangelistic missions, particularly to the Ukraine, very successfully. And what you have to remember is the big change in the Ukraine was in 2005 when the so-called Orange Revolution took place. And that elected a bunch of pro-Western, pro-democratic political leaders who really were at odds with Moscow. Just remember, Vladimir Putin came to Ukraine during an election cycle which was leading to the emergence of these so-called orange revolutionaries. Mm-hmm. And the leading democratic orange revolutionary politician was sort of wounded in the face when somebody splashed a form of acid on him. And that was largely suspected of being a sort of Russian secret police thug. So the Ukrainians are very wary of Russian control and influence. And the fact that they want to get close to Europe means that they want to ally their society with groups that are much more democratic than the Russian political system now allows.
David, final question, just a few seconds left. Is this a matter where those of us who are Christians living in the United States, we need to be in prayer about this? Do we petition our government to try to intercede on behalf of the cause of freedom? Is it both? What do you say?
Yeah, we definitely need to be in great prayer about this. We need to remind our government, our members of Congress and of Senate, that we really care about Ukrainian and other Eastern European Christians who seem to be threatened by this encroaching Russian nationalist tidal wave. And it's not just religious people. I mean, the possibility that Putin may try to flex his muscles really to draw up a new Russian empire at the expense of Eastern Europe is really very worrying to everybody in Europe.
David Aikman, you can find him at davidaikman.com. He's a professor at Patrick Henry College and historian and brings us great wisdom on the events of our lifetimes. David, as always, thanks so much. We look forward to talking to you again soon and hope you have a blessed weekend.
Thank you.
It's 7:54. This is the Faith Radio Network. I'm Austin Hill. Our program continues momentarily. Faith Radio Network. I'm here weekday morning, 6 till 8. My name is Austin Hill. Thank you for listening. I appreciate it very much. We're wrapping up week number 3 here on the program, and I appreciate the good service of our studio engineer and producer, Aaron McIntyre. Good job, Aaron, on the other side of the glass booth there. And thank you for being with us. Find us anytime at myfaithradio.com. And by the way, earlier this morning, if you were not with us, Glenn Stanton, prolific commentator, author, and researcher, cultural researcher, with a great book out about daughters and sons, raising secure daughters and confident sons. What a concept, right? We spoke with him early in the 6 o'clock hour. And if you missed that, well, we'll have that posted for you on myfaithradio.com. Encourage you to go back and reconnect with some of the things that he was saying about this. Here we are in the midst of the summer. We're a little past the halfway point, I would say, in most cases around the country, halfway through the summer. And for a lot of us, we're already focused in on getting our sons and daughters, nieces and nephews, grandkids back to school in the fall, whether that's, you know, fourth grade or that's junior year of college or whatever it is. We're already focused on back to school efforts. Consider, if you will, take some time to really prayerfully consider what kind of environment the young person in your life will be re-entering when school does get back in session 3 or 4 weeks from now or 6 weeks from now or what have you. My teenage son, my high school son, who begins his junior year of high school this fall, he's actually on a church retreat right now. It's not a church camp experience so much, but the high schoolers in our church actually took a trip out of town to go visit a homeless shelter in another city in another state across the country. And they're camped out, staying the night in a church facility and working with the homeless in an inner city sort of environment. I am, my wife and I are prayerful that that's a transformative experience for he and the other students as they go about doing some very, very important work. If you've got young people in your family that are planning maybe still yet a family vacation or fun trips or recreational sorts of things, that's great. But I hope you'll consider the very confusing and perplexing world that young adults are growing up in today. And get to myfaithradio.com and consider some of the things that Glenn Stanton was talking about as they pertain to raising up secure daughters and confident sons and understanding gender. Male, female, clearly delineated definitions. We can't take those definitions for granted in our culture. They have to come from me, you, and you, and from other parents and our churches. MyFaithRadio.com. Check out the interview. I'll see you Saturday for Austin Hill's Big World of Small Business, my program, noon Central Time. Have a great week and keep it here on the Faith Radio Network. Thanks for listening to this podcast from Austin Hill in the Morning. For more information about this, you can visit Austin Hill in the Morning, our program page, on MyFaithRadio.com. That's MyFaithRadio.com.